papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on what's going on in the news media. A little bit of truth telling about trying to tell the truth. And we are some veteran newsroom leaders who hope to give you some insight into what goes on. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now creating the Upstate American. Next to me is Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette, vice president of the New York Press Association. Down at the end of the table over there is Barbara Lombardo, the former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy, teaching at UAlbany these days. And across from us here is David Gustina, the producer of this program, the WAMC morning host. And we are trying to bring some light and some substance to the crazy stuff that goes on in the world around us and the ever-important world of the news media. You know, I might start out, not to be overly critical, but a lot of people are now taking issue with the news media coverage of President Biden, saying two things. First, that we in the media are being overly critical of Joe Biden. Second, that we're not doing enough about Donald Trump. Judy Patrick, you came in a little bit loaded for bear this morning on this topic.
You know, liberals loved it when the media scrutinized Donald Trump in a fair way. They hate it when you say anything wrong about Biden. And in fact, I think that in part has led to the surprise we all felt when we listened to President Biden stumble through his first debate and President Biden stumble through his interview with George Stephanopoulos and stumble through an on-air interview with the Morning Joe team. We were surprised because too many of us succumbed to the pressure we felt from liberals. Whenever you wrote anything about Joe Biden taking a long time to get up the stairs or anytime he fumbled over words, you know, don't pick on him. He's got a stutter. We've got to be a little bit more accommodating. I think that in some respects, we caved to that. And now we need to tell the truth. And when we tell the truth, man, the liberals do not like that. And they, you know, they're canceling their New York Times subscriptions and they're saying, why aren't you focusing on Donald Trump when we've, especially at this program, we focused on him for the last 5 or 6 years, every foible of his. We even discussed whether or not to air his rallies in full. Remember, it was just a few months ago, so everyone could see how he, in fact, stumbles through.
There's also something else in here, Judy, which is the past experience we had with Joe Biden, even though there's been questions about his age and the American people, especially young people, don't like that he's really old, is that at the State of the Union, he did really well. He seemed to buck that trend that he wasn't with it and spoke very well at that address. And I think it left a lot of us with an impression, okay, President Biden, he's capable, he can do it. Contrast that with what happened at the debate. New information. Oh my goodness, this is bad.
You are both getting my dander up.
All right.
And I love when your dander's up.
Barbara, what do you want?
For you, Judy, to say that the media caved to liberal pressure, I think, is untrue. I mean, unless you're speaking for yourself as a member of the roundtable, perhaps. It was not the liberal media caving to the liberal pressure. It's people reporting what is. I will say that the media that would be left-leaning or trying to be fair, maybe we weren't as critical as Biden as they probably should have been. But to say that there was, in this debate, that there's focus now on the candidate who was unfit to run for office and the lies that Donald Trump uttered throughout that debate, he may have done them forcefully and without fumfering like I am right now, but he lied throughout the debate. He is unfit to run. Well, he's fit to run because he's running, but he is unfit to be the president of the United States. So for the media now to be focusing primarily on whether Biden is fit is an unfair comparison. However, the question now is, what do the Democrats want to do about it if their goal is to defeat Trump? And I think that the media's goal should be to make sure the public understands what's at risk.
How do you do this, though, Barbara? If you are covering this campaign, if you're covering these people and you know that there are so many lies that Donald Trump tells constantly. I believe the total was 53 were absolutely clear in the debate. How do you even begin to tell that? And is that as newsworthy as the news, news being something that is new, the news that we really are questioning whether Joe Biden is fit?
It's legitimate that we're questioning whether Joe Biden is fit to run for office, but it needs to be repeated alongside of it that the other guy is also not fit to run for office.
And one party is doing something about it and the other is not, right? One party is getting ready to embrace with all their heart Donald Trump. Decent people like John Faso, the former congressman, who is still standing with this guy. That's very different from what you see, and that is worth reporting the difference that you see, right?
Yes, it is worth reporting the difference. And the news now is who is going to be the Democratic candidate,
right?
Without a question. And whether, no matter who it is, what is the polling show is likely to happen in the election.
But you can't make up the news. You can't say, why isn't anybody calling for Trump to drop out, when in fact they are doing that on the Democratic side, right? That's the news.
Yeah, and I think it's more nuanced than we always try to make it out to be in a simple conversation. The idea that, for example, in the editorial by the New York Times, they took great pains to say how unfit President Donald Trump was, and that's why they wanted President Biden to step aside to allow someone who had more vim and vigor and was equally intelligent to step into that position and take on Trump. Everywhere you go, we have seen a change in how you cover a president because of Donald Trump. The first time we began to say outright, you're a liar. So the whole landscape has changed in that regard for how the press reports, simply because of who Donald Trump is. And by now, we all know he's a lying, 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 liar. But we can't avoid 30% of the American population who thinks he's fit and loves his style.
You and know, 20% more who's going to vote for him anyway.
Okay. I think the White House press corps feel like they got snookered by the White House communications staff regarding President Biden's fitness for office. Although there were clear signs when he refused to do sit-down interviews with newspapers, which I always thought was a great idea, because if he truly has a great command of policy and what's happening in the world, the best place to do that is sitting down with a newspaper reporter who has the time to ask them those kind of in-depth questions where he could have really done well, excelled. So you're seeing that bubble up when you have the White House press briefings, where you have these more than testy exchanges with the White House press secretary, because people feel like they were not told everything. Now, should they have pushed more? I think they should have pushed more. But those who did push, they got pushback from, again, liberals who say, how dare you fall for the right-wing memes that say that, you know, the president is a doddering old fool. I mean, I was one of those who thought, yeah, the guy doesn't jump up and down, doesn't run up and down the stairs to Air Force One as fast as I could. But that's because he's 81. He can still make good decisions.
And if you have to ask the White House and their spokespeople what's going on, what do you expect them to say in response? And in fact, Alex Thompson from Axios talked about the gaslighting the administration did in denying a lot of this, even though there was some evidence.
When he talked about wearing special sneakers to reduce the likelihood of tripping, that kind of thing.
Right. That doesn't mean you can't make it to 86 as president.
Sure. Exactly.
But there were other things that do raise questions about whether he can make it to 86 as president. I caught a couple of minutes of the Sean Hannity show, and the segment that I heard was talking about how the greatest political corruption and cover-up in our history has been this cover-up of trying to put an unfit person, person in the White House, and you're urging, and he's urging his listeners to vote because you're being lied to, and this is all part of the cover-up. He also said no matter who they put in his place are still going to have the horrible policies.
What network could have said Sean Hannity?
Never heard of that.
Sorry you ended up there.
You know, the difficulty is that when you do the reporting on the nuance of aging that we're seeing from Joe Biden, it is a valid concern. You know, we remember 2 years ago watching the video of President Biden bicycling along the boardwalk, looking fit as can be at 78, 79 years old. And that's terrific. You know, you never saw Donald Trump, by the way, riding a bike. But that, again, to the point, that is not what makes a great president. It's just that aging is not necessarily ordinal. You don't age precisely in one step after another. You may have, in fact, bad days. You may be losing it faster 3 months from now than you are now. I speak as, well, we are all aging, you know. It's just that some of us in this room are older than others. And
I guess I'm disturbed by some of the, hate to say, glee of breaking news where there's just so much second-by-second speculation. There's coverage and tons of speculation. And it could be my own fault of being sucked up into some of the cable news networks where it gets repeated.
But do you think that then the news media is driving the story, or is what's happening behind the scenes driving the story?
Or is it mutually exclusive? I mean, is a little bit of both happening
here? I think it's both.
Your job is to try to find as much as you can, and sometimes that drives a story forward. And your job is to be as fair and honest as you can be. But the difficulty is when you, well, you do have certain offenses, like this talk radio host in Philadelphia who admitted that she had used questions for President Biden that had been fed to her by the White House press team.
And that never happens with politicians or any guest, right?
Oh, boy.
That's sarcasm. They're always trying to give you the questions, but you shouldn't be taking them.
Yeah, I don't know who to be more unhappy with, the White House press office giving the questions or the radio host for agreeing to ask them.
Oh, it was disgusting, too, where the White House people are saying, oh, well, you know better now. We'll never do that again.
Right.
Now I've got my dander up again.
You know, there are often efforts by media relations people, let's say by press aides to politicians, to get you to do the kind of story that they want. We had a governor in this state whose press office promised me an exclusive on a really big story for the Times Union if I would be so kind as to just make sure that I got the governor's name in the first two paragraphs. You know,
sounded like a small thing because they're trying to accomplish their goals.
That's right. But you just can't even talk to you about this.
So do you think this radio reporter, right, should have lost their job over this?
I think it's okay. You feel bad for the reporter, but I mean, I think that you have to make a stance and say, if you allow this to go on, that violates the standards that you need to have.
This is one of the basic questions we talk to our college students who want to be journalists. You don't just take questions from a source. You do your research. They can send you any questions they want, but you're going to independently look. And if they send you a question that's valid,
sure,
you can ask that question, but it's your determination.
It's okay for a reporter to say, you can send me what you have in mind, but I'm going to pick the questions I want to ask.
Absolutely. I have that all the time. All the time they try to tell, well, what topic are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
Something involving your role. Why else am I having you on?
Yeah, and in this case, it totally backfired on the Biden administration because what they were trying to do was establish that President Biden is an effective communicator, can answer questions. Well, he can answer questions when he knows exactly what the questions are going to be.
All right. If you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and our producer, David Gustina. And we welcome your thoughts, media@wamc.org. I should tell you that we have a letter from Mike, a listener, who says that he listened to us talking about faltering revenue from subscriptions and the trend of seeing online subscriptions at a very low price. And he says, I have an idea. News organizations would benefit from providing more information to consumers who are finding their local papers less useful as a resource as newsrooms become depleted of reporters. So he's talking about sharing content as though, you know, why can't we do that sort of thing? And I appreciate this point of view, Mike, that the idea would be to basically allow people, once you subscribe to one publication, to get access to others in your network for perhaps just a little bit more per day or per month or per year. But there is a lot of content sharing going on, isn't there already?
Yeah, there is shared content out there, but there's a limit to how much people will read and how much they want. If you're subscribing to a local news organization, you tend to want local news. So if you have shared content from that local community, sure, they'll read it. But if it's from a place 20 miles away or 30 miles away, they're really not that interested in it. Local content has to be really, really local for it to grab the attention of someone willing to pay for it.
A related issue, and I appreciate the writer bringing this question up, is that newspapers are still a business, whether they're a not-profit business, as many are turning to nowadays, or a for-profit business, as most of them still are.
Sliding into nonprofit status.
Yes, they are, yeah, they are competing businesses. I remember coming out of grad school with my journalism degree and starting my job at the Saratogian, and I was so naive about the business end of things back then. I was shocked at, oh my God, all this stuff that's in the Times Union out of Albany and the Schenectady Daily Gazette. And boy, wouldn't it be better if we had all of this information? And there's a reason that that isn't shared from a financial perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And the reason that editors get really angry when somebody uses the content without attribution. You know, if you're a TV station and you read on TimesUnion.com a story and you then use it on your air without attribution, that's kind of nasty.
Well, I just want to answer Mike. First of all, thank you for writing to the Media Project, media@wamc.org. One more time, just for all of you, please share your thoughts. Also, this is something that's grown as a result of less people being employed. When there are fewer and fewer people working in media, we become more cooperative because you can only have so many people cover so many events. And what you've seen in public broadcasting, Ian Pickus, our news director, talked about this on a recent program. They formally created the New York Public News Network, which now shares news stories back and forth across the state. And that's wonderful. But again, in the end, it's less people being employed as journalists and less news overall and information. None of that's good for the industry, although I appreciate what Mike is trying to do.
Right. There was a time when you could have a bureau. You know, when I was the editor of the Troy Record in the early 90s, we had bureaus in Hoosick Falls and Mechanicville. And we launched a Times Union bureau in Saratoga Springs with five journalists in it.
You had to carry your Thursday paper in a wheelbarrow.
It was fabulous. But it didn't last, did it? Because there just wasn't enough revenue. We were in a declining revenue stage. So now we see the impact of it. And we have a lot of the ghost newspapers that just have nameplates and not really much local news beyond those nameplates. They're basically run from afar. So thank you, Mike. We appreciate that point of view. And we need to think about how actually news organizations can stretch those dollars further. There is a digital news report that comes out every, 3 years or so, done by the Reuters Institute, that had some ideas based on surveys of 95,000 people in the media from 47 markets. And there are some critical takeaways as to what the audience really cares about that might make a difference. And I thought a couple of these would be interesting for us to talk about. One of them is that it's urging that online sources produce more video. And, you know, we're all online these days. WAMC, the newspapers that we used to edit, we are all digital platforms. But the video that really gets attention these days is, of course, great stuff that's on TikTok or on Instagram. And it does seem to me that that would be a great avenue for us to explore in terms of getting news out that way.
Haven't we done this before?
Haven't we tried this before?
Haven't we tried this like 5 or 6 years ago, or maybe even 10 years ago? Good video takes so much time, manpower, and technology to produce. You can grab bad video from 911 calls, and I mean, those are the kinds of things I see often on social media, but it seems like doing really good video, man, sucks a lot of manpower out of a newsroom.
Yeah, it takes a special talent to do that, too. You could have a great reporter who might be a great writer, or you might have a great radio reporter who can think on their feet. All those skills are not necessarily interchangeable. If you have one person who could do it all, and I think that Judy and Rex and I were all at newspapers at a point where we were trying to include video, usually, at least at our paper, that the reporter was taking. They'd do their interview, they would take their notes, and they would also try to get 30 seconds or a minute of something that could be used as a video to be embedded into their online version of the coverage. And Some were really good at that and some weren't, but it was definitely time-consuming. It didn't pay off.
But this is why, actually, in the better journalism programs now, young people are being taught video and digital production so that you can, even if you don't have video, so that you know how to create visual effects that will have an impact, that will be as catchy as Instagram posts are, so that you can give people a headline. I think there's real hope for this, but it's not going to be enough to replicate the revenue that has been lost.
Well, and here's the issue, isn't it? TikTok, I really kind of see it this way, as an entertainment medium. So are you jazzing up the news to get people to watch? I mean, where does that line get crossed?
Yeah,
and it is easier to do video now than it was when we were doing it five or 10 years ago. And this might be a great opportunity for us to collaborate with a local television station or somehow work together, because they often don't have the manpower to do real investigative or hard-hitting news stories. Maybe there's some sort of shared agreement where you could get that kind of video.
I also think our college students could be helpful with this. They use this technology. They grew up in it. They swim in that water already, and their ideas are interesting. I've seen a number of videos produced by my students that give me pause in a good way, that say, wow, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought to do this way. And they understand themselves and their own audience best.
This all sounds real familiar.
It does.
Again.
It sounds like 10 years ago, partnerships with TV stations, getting students to do work. It's real familiar, and we are still in an uncertain time here.
Right, even citizen journalists was a thing.
Yep.
I don't really hear that used now, but several years ago, going back to the writer's question about sharing content, that one of the things that certainly came up in the company that owned the Saratogian was, how about using citizen journalists to cover local news? And that was a very difficult prospect.
I actually teach a course in citizen journalism that we offer free to people throughout the state. And I just did one about a month ago, and I had, 30 people sign up, and we talk about the basics of journalism, and as partly as to give them a foundation to work with a local newspaper.
That's fantastic.
At the first round, I had 100 people sign up.
How do we learn more about this? This is not a setup, listeners. This is great.
Yeah, it is. In some respects, the people who take part in it are just interested in learning more about local journalism. But some of them take that information and they head off to their local newspaper and try to start covering a town board or a festival or something. It's not meant to replace real journalists. It's meant to go back to the old community correspondents that we probably all dealt with way back when, where they would file a report from, the boondocks.
And it promotes news literacy, doesn't it?
It does. That's
Is that on the New York Press Association?
It's through the New York Press Association, and we advertise it in all the local newspapers.
NYPA.org? What's the website?
Yeah, NYPA.org.
But give her a few minutes to get it up on the site.
Yeah, that's terrific. The problem with using correspondence stringers is that they don't have all the skills that journalists do. And when I was the editor of the Record in Troy, we had 20 or so people that we would pay them $25 to go to a town board meeting. And you would get little stories about, a town supervisor turning to the Record correspondent saying, this part's off the record. Don't report this. Okay. And
no, I teach about that. That's one of my, yes. I discourage that.
Or you get one who's, like we had one who was very brave, and she got nails put into her tires at a town board meeting.
So, now you've made it.
Yeah. Right. So these are opportunities, but it's difficult to figure out a way to stretch the dollars. And one of the hard things, too, is, we've talked in this program about how many local news organizations are popping up that are not real, that are now partisan, that are, in effect, fake news. And, what to do about that is difficult. There's a new survey out talking about false information online. There's so much of it. And now it turns out that most Americans now favor restrictions on false information. Notwithstanding the First Amendment, there is now a huge share of Americans, let me see if I can get the number here, who believe the government ought to step in. From 39% in 2018 said the federal government should restrict false information. That has now gone to 55%. More than half of adults believe the government should be able to step in to stop false information. Would you trust the government to define what is false and what is not? In the context of our conversations about Donald Trump and Joe Biden, who's going to make that judgment?
No, but I don't think the American people would let the journalists make that decision.
Right.
I mean, more people wanted the tech companies themselves to do that, but even that is problematic. Any controlling it in any way, which makes sense on the surface, is really problematic. Do we want Elon Musk deciding what's false?
Well, I want Elon Musk being held to account for false information that he publishes. And so I guess I'd say yes. I think if you own, it's like owning a press and deciding, okay, I'm the publisher, I'm going to give a voice to what is true and not to what is false. That, I think, is your responsibility.
But then who's holding him to account?
Only consumers. Who else could, you know?
Not
could they pass a law?
Or civil lawsuits is the bottom line.
Yeah, but you can't sue based upon what's false unless it's defamatory. So this is a difficult problem. How do you get around somebody like Elon Musk, who doesn't really have a standard of truth as much as he has a standard of what he wants people to know?
Maybe Americans should take some personal responsibility and determine for themselves what's true and what's false, and do a little bit of research about credible news organizations and net.
But not just on the internet.
There are resources out there. There are plenty of organizations that are working to fight, to combat misinformation or disinformation. You just have to work a little bit and take a class. There's information out there. The Trust News Project is a good place to start.
And, I mean, it sounds self-serving to say this, but established news organizations that have a track record of reporting factual information, such as this news organization on Northeast Public Radio, such as the newspapers that we edited, those are places that you're more likely to find trustworthy information than just some new fly-by-night digital source or some cable television channel.
And that's our biggest argument, Rex, during our fund drives. And it's what people tell us over and over again they're listening for. They want a straight shot at information. They want to have a source that they can trust.
All right. On that point, which we hope we continue to be for you folks.
Oh, my gosh. Are we done?
What? The time.
This show should never be an hour.
It's Judy Patrick there, and Barbara Lombardo, and David Gustina, and I'm Rex Smith. And we thank you for joining us in the Media Project, and we hope that you'll join us again next week when we hope to bring you more information about our efforts to tell the truth. Thanks for joining us on the Media Project.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper gill, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Readers get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.